Hi everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Livin' for Food pod. I am so sorry for the delay today. This episode was supposed to go up, and for some technological difficulties or something happened where it didn't go up, and then I was traveling all day, so I didn't see it. But now I am re-recording at nearly midnight in my hotel room. But the show must go on, as they say. This episode, I talked to someone who I met over the summer. He basically focuses on dining and entertainment, but he's an incredible chef from Nigeria. We talked a lot about West African food and culture. We talked a lot about his upbringing and just in general had a wonderful conversation. He's doing big things, and you'll hear all about that in our conversation that's coming up. So please join me in welcoming Chef Eros, who is also known as the Billionaire Chef. So, besides our chatting as you came on, but great to see you again.
Same.
I know a large part of your story from the lovely dinner we had. I think it was back in June now, it was a while ago. But listeners might not know your story, so I kind of want to dive in to the very beginning when you were like a mini billionaire chef running around, who didn't know it yet, kind of deal. So, how does that sound? We'll start with your background. Is that good?
Yeah, sounds good.
Amazing. So, growing up in Nigeria, what did food and meals look like for you?
All right, so I mean, I was born in Benin City, which is the south of Nigeria. My dad's from Lagos, which is in the west side. And being born into a family of different cultures, we spent a lot of time at the dining table, and our cuisine, the food that we ate, went across different cultures. My grandmother and my mother are huge hosts. My grandmother actually used to own a restaurant as well. And so you can imagine that food was a big deal in our house. We spent a lot of time at the dining table, hence why the dining table has become like a huge part of my life myself. But yeah, I grew up in Benin City, between Benin and Lagos. And then I went to university in Wolverhampton in the UK. And that's when it really dawned on me how important food was to me. Because I couldn't find anything close to what I grew up eating around. Initially, I was excited to go to the UK and have access to like KFC and McDonald's and just be able to like junk food it out. After 2 weeks of junk fooding, I was like, "Mommy, where's the pepper? Where is the stew? Where's the jollof?" You know, and that's how I got into food, was them teaching me how to make some of the things that I loved, grew up eating as a kid, and then now finding out that I had a gift myself for it, and how much it made everyone else happy.
Were you in the kitchen at all because there was a restaurant that ran in your family, or not really?
I mean, I was in and out. I was only in there because I wanted something. I wasn't in there because I needed to do anything. I was in there because I wanted something. I wanted some, you know, I wanted to taste. I was a really good taste tester, you know.
I get
And I was the
that.
baby of the house, so people couldn't really say no to me. You know, I'll come with my cute face and be like, "Can I get some?" And that was just me. That was pretty much it. I think only until when I was leaving high school did I even actually start to do anything per se. On Saturdays, as kids, my mother would give us each tasks. Like, so my brother would be on bacon duty, my sister would be on egg duty, you know, my other brother would be on yam duty. I'll be on slicing the bread duty, you know. Just don't cut yourself, you know. You know. So, but then as I went into university, that's when I really started to take food seriously.
Yeah, see, the babies of the family, they get away with a lot.
Yeah.
I'm learning that with my younger sister. I'm like, I paved the way for you for certain
Mm-hmm.
things. It's very frustrating. But you got to do it, you know. So when
Gotta
you
do
went to the UK, you were studying international business, correct?
Correct.
So when you went into that schooling, was cooking even on your mind, or what was the pathway there for you? What was the
I
game
mean,
plan?
it was, I always say this, necessity was the mother of my invention, right? So I was in Wolverhampton studying international business, 2 weeks in, thinking, "Good Lord, I need some Nigerian food." And that's when I had to get myself into the kitchen. And my mother and my grandmother literally taught me how to make food over the phone. You know, the good thing is I knew exactly what I wanted everything to taste like. And so I was able to work around, you know, the instructions and make the food. But then that was when my journey in food really started. And it started off of me just like cooking for myself and then hosting some house parties and making some chicken. And I became the chicken guy. And then I was always hosting one event or the other. And I was always cooking and having friends over. And that's when it really, really started. I ended up getting jobs in the food space. So I worked with a number of restaurants in Wolverhampton as well. And then when my mother wanted to open a restaurant, I went back home in 2009 to help her open the restaurant. I was 21. And that's when she gifted the restaurant to me. And I was like, oh God, here we go.
Oh my God. So your mother gifted the restaurant to you?
Yeah, at 21.
Wow.
Because she just realized at the time that I was so passionate about it, more so than her. You know, she just really liked the idea of it, but I really, really wanted to get into the details of the menu and the execution and the plating and the style of the restaurant and the decor and the setting and who comes and who doesn't come. Right. And she's just like, yo, I just want to cook. You know, so yeah, that's how I got into the restaurant space.
And that was traditional Nigerian food.
No, at the time when I started, I was cooking other than, you know, when I started professionally, we bought into a restaurant called La Saison, and it was a French style restaurant. We then added on a little bit of Italian, and we added a little bit of Asian, and then we added on some Nigerian, and that was what we had as the seasons. And then, which is La Saison, the name of the restaurant. And then when we sold the restaurant, I went into the confectionery space. I opened a bakery called Cookie Jar.
Mm-hmm. I was actually just looking at that.
Yeah, I opened a bakery called Cookie Jar, and I ran that for about a year, then opened a catering business, which is called Eros and Gourmet, and that was when I started cooking Nigerian food again. But from a very, like, I started doing, like, hors d'oeuvres and canapes, but, like, with Nigerian ingredients, and that's when it became, like, a thing.
Okay. I got a few points on that. Some schooling that you had from the business background, did that help you at all?
Absolutely. Okay. I studying international business management definitely gave me a lot of the tools that I needed to be able to run a business successfully. Now I have about 5 different businesses in different parts of, you know, in Nigeria, here in LA as well, you know, and I'm running them remotely as well. And I think that if I didn't have the business acumen, I wouldn't have gotten as far as I have in the time frame that I have.
And I mean, from where you are now, you seem like super confident, like pretty secure in what you've been doing. When you were 21 and you started doing this, were there any doubts or any pressures that you felt?
Absolutely. I remember when I was turning 23, I was telling myself, why the hell are you doing this? Like, what the hell? You know, that's when I sold the restaurants and then ended up in the bakery shortly after. Okay. And then
totally
in 2016, I was asking myself again, why are you doing this? Like, you could be doing anything else. Like, why are you cooking? And that's when I realized that my joy was really in entertaining people around the dining table.
Okay, so what was the contrast for you between cooking and baking? Is that something you like equally, or?
No, so I mean, I had the bakery on one side, and then I was doing a lot of events catering on the other side. But what I found that because I came in as a restaurateur into the industry at 21, right? I wasn't a chef then. And then when I opened the bakery is when I started training as a chef. And I started training as a pastry chef first. And what I found is that my training and my learning as a pastry chef positively affected my experience as a cuisine chef. Because there was a lot of, you know, attention to detail, precision, you know, that goes into the, you know, pastry arts that I have now translated into the culinary arts in itself, into the, cuisine art.
Right. Especially fine dining too. You kind of have to carry over that precision as well.
Absolutely.
So I know I've heard pastry chefs and that sort of baking is so difficult, and it can be so just like scientifically precise.
I don't think baking is difficult. I think it requires a certain level of understanding and comfort. And you would also find, just like with cooking, the recipe is not the Bible. It's a guide. Baking is a lot about ratios. You know, it's a lot about ratios, temperature, you know, and technique. And so it's, I can bake a cake in my, with my eyes closed. Like baking isn't difficult for me because I've had the experience as well, right? So it's one of those things where, you know, a practice makes perfect. You just have to be patient through it. It's always going to start off rough. Baking is one of those things that's going to start off rough.
I've been there.
You're going to make a hot mess of your kitchen. Everywhere is going to be upside down. You're going to hate it.
Yeah.
But then you go in the second time and it's going to be better. And then as you carry on going, you're going to get so much better that you would realize, just like the kitchen, it's all about your mise en place. The biggest mistake you can make in baking is not have everything measured out beforehand.
Yeah, see, that's...
That's the biggest mistake a lot of people make, is go in there thinking, oh, okay, I'll start off with the egg. Then you don't want to go looking for the milk while the egg is going.
Yeah, I do that. I never read it.
Because you don't want to rush your measuring process. You want to be able to take your time to measure everything out. Like I always say, baking is one of those things where it's about making the space look beautiful. So it's like laying everything out nicely. So I always say, if you're starting off baking, invest in nice, like, mise en place dishes, so that even as you're prepping, you almost want to take a picture of it. You know, it just makes the process so much more interesting. And be patient. You're gonna make a mess the first time. That's okay. You can still eat it. It just won't be the same texture that you're expecting, or it may not come out like, because you're gonna be anxious. You're gonna open the oven when you're not supposed to open the oven.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of like techniques and temperature control that you have to be conscious of. You know, and after a while, it becomes like second nature to you. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can never put anything in the oven and open the oven while it's there. I know when it's gonna be ready. I can smell it. I can almost smell it before the clock goes off. I'll be like, "That it's ready."
Okay, you're coming over.
And then you hear the clock go off.
You're coming over. I want a cake. Because I don't read the recipe through. And that's something I lack, for sure.
Oh, you got to read that recipe through. You got to read the tips. You know, you have to pay attention to all of that. And you have to make mistakes.
Yes.
Just how it goes.
Well, I just feel like it always ends up working out, at least in my situation. But I think the gap where a lot of people get intimidated with the kitchen and stuff is exactly what you said, is using the recipe as a guide. And then they don't know what to do when it's kind of their place to figure it out themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And it's all those ratios, you know, so your balance of your wet to dry, you know, and just making sure, okay, if you don't have enough something, just cut down on something else.
All right, maybe I'll read it through next time. Probably not, but I'm just going to say I will. You had your catering company. Did you always have this sense that you really connected with people, and that's why, did that help you kind of figure that out? Or how did you know that entertaining was something that was really interested you?
I mean, I've always had a thing for like engaging with people. You know, even as a child, they used to call me Atwetwe, which means just running around the whole place talking. You know, so I was always doing that. And I took that from my mother, to be honest. I found out recently, like 3 weeks ago, that my mother used to be called radio.
Oh.
Radio with no antenna is what they used to call her, right? I definitely picked up those traits. And then when I was growing up as a kid, obviously your parents would want to try your hands out in different things. You know, I was pretty good at music. I was pretty good at like acting, you know, and so now I combine all of that into my work. I don't sing anymore, but like I still have a knack for music, and I use music as a means of communication at my dinners, you know, and I'm acting a stage. It's like almost like I'm acting a stage play. It's almost like a one man show, you know, one man act show, which is fun, you know.
It was.
But I'm really looking forward to expanding that and having a production team so that I can stop handling the music, the lights, and the sound all at the same time.
My gosh, you're a one man show.
It's crazy.
I love that though. I'd never been to a dinner theater like that, and it was just like so fun to just kind of like let loose and just let you kind of also inform us too on what we were eating, because a lot of times when I go to dinners and they're different cuisines, I really don't know the history and culture behind it.
Yeah.
What if unless it's an article I'm writing besides my own research, you know?
Yeah.
That's very cool. But so after leaving school, this was probably like 13 years after you moved to LA. So what was the thought process behind you making this big change? Was this like a total culture shock?
Yeah, definitely. Completely different environment. So far away from home. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have the level of support that I was used to being at home. You know, you have all this help as well. Definitely culture shock. You know, we shout a lot. You can't shout here. Shout at somebody, they're going to tell you that you're being, you know, so.
You can shout in New York.
Yeah, in New York, but not in LA. LA, everyone's very temperamental and very like, oh my God. Yeah. You know, but it's been good because it's definitely taught me a lot about different cultures and different people, and I've been able to adapt nicely.
Have you tried a bunch of different foods and stuff? What do you think the food scene is like in LA? Because now you're kind of breaking into with your West African cuisine. I'm curious.
I'll be honest that I haven't had the opportunity to try out a lot as much as you would think because I am always working. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always working, and I only have like the one day odd off here and there.
Okay.
And most times I just want to take my ass to bed. Sorry, my mind was, you know, so. But the food scene here is growing. It definitely is like a melting pot because you have all these different cultures from, you know, there's so many different Asian cultures here, you know, alongside the Latin American cultural influence as well, you know, and then obviously the standard American, but then California in itself has its own, like, cuisine, so to speak, you know. Okay. There's just such a thing as a SoCal cuisine, right? So I mean, the food scene is definitely growing, and with people like me, you know, and people from all sorts of different cultures coming in here and doing things with pride, it's only way up from here.
Yeah, for sure. People always ask me too. I have the same kind of deal because I'm a food journalist, they're like, where should I eat in LA? Like, this place, like, give me your entire list, what is it? And I'm like, I honestly don't even go out to eat that much outside of my events because I'm always working or I'm traveling and eating there instead. So when I come home, I'm like, not really eating. Not
exactly.
So I like want to go to bed too when I come mm-hmm. back. So, and then I just cook instead or something. So I feel you on that. But you and I were, I feel like we were talking about this at the dinner a few months ago, but you have a lot of tenacity. You're, you know, obviously an entrepreneur. You made the leap. You went for it, essentially making yourself the brand, which is what a lot of people are doing these days, changing your name from Chef Eros to the Billionaire Chef on Instagram. I feel like you convey such like a lively and positive personality, but I've talked to a lot of business owners who, you know, have struggled a little bit just in general, and they've had to give up things like a huge amount of time and energy that we were just talking about, like how much you work. So this is all coming up to say, how do you keep that liveliness and excitement up while still focusing on reaching your goals?
To be honest, I take things a day at a time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't worry too much about the future. I have plans, don't get me wrong. But I know that my plans are subject to change, and whether it's changed by the environment or changed for myself as well. But yeah, my strategy is really to just take every single day at a time, take a day at a time, and just be thankful for what I have, and be very hopeful, optimistic, and you know, just have faith that you know what will be, and it will be in my favor, you know. But yeah, so it's just having that balance between you know thinking about the future and focusing on today, but more so focusing on today most of the time. You know, and then also learning to take a break. You know, one of the things that I do is every 3 months I step away for about a week and I just go rest somewhere away. You know, it just gives me a time to reset, to be able to review, you know, my performance in the last 3 months, you know, my actions in the last 3 months, and be able to take notes of some things that I want to grow and change.
That's a really good thing to be able to set boundaries for yourself like that. I feel like I struggle with that a little bit where I'm just in work mode, and then you get so deep into it that you get out so easily. So having that checkpoint for yourself is actually a really smart tactic. people don't feel like they have the time or space to do, but you can do it. You just have to make the space for it, you know? I also would love to talk about, because you've been on screen a few times. I just saw that you are going to be in a series for PBS, which is super exciting. That's congratulations. It's
Thank you.
called Rebel
Rural Kitchens. Yeah.
Southern California. I don't know how much you can talk about yet because it airs on September 19th, but could you
It's
give
out already on PBS. On
Oh.
PBS, the app. What airs September 19th would be the, I guess, the one on TV and the YouTube.
Oh, okay. So it's on PBS. So could you give the audience, if they, want to watch it on YouTube or something, a gist of what it's about, where, like, what's going on in the show?
I mean, Rainbow Kitchen is just about what we're doing. What they're doing is diving into the lives of chefs, food enthusiasts, predominantly chefs who are doing things in the food industry differently, you know, that don't have the standard restaurants, whether it's a pop-up, whether it's an outdoor space, you know, whether it's in a home, like in my case, you know. It's just showcasing chefs who are doing things differently. But in my case, I'm dramatic as hell. And if you watch the episode, it's so dramatic. But that's who I am. You know, I come from a very dramatic culture. You know, we're very full of life. We're full of energy. And you see that in my episode. And then I'm also able to take you through my Taste of West Africa menu that cuts you across from Togo and Benin into Ghana, into Nigeria, Senegal, and the rest of West Africa.
I love it. I mean, the drama is what keeps you on the TV. They love a good
They do.
dramatic person. I'm curious because your mom was like really prevalent, in the beginning of your career. Has she come to LA to see?
No, not yet. She's been very focused on holding down the fourth in Nigeria, so she hasn't had the time to. But we hope to be able to get out here next year.
Oh, that'd be so exciting. Do you go back to Nigeria? Because I don't you import a lot of your products from
So
there?
yeah, I import a lot of my products, and I do go back to Nigeria. I'm heading back in December as well.
Oh, nice. For all the holiday time, then that could be your reset
Yeah.
as well.
You can't reset in Nigeria. Nigeria is in December is Desert December. It's back to back. It's one event or the other, one party or the other, one dinner or the other. So
Okay, but that's fun in
it is
itself.
fun. It is fun. It is a lot of fun. The reset comes afterwards. After break, you need a break from the break.
Okay.
You need a holiday from the holiday.
No, I get that. It's like whenever you take an intense trip, it's like you need to take another vacation afterwards.
Yeah.
I get that. I gotta ask you too, because you were also on screen when you did a Chase commercial with Michael B. Jordan. This is really a question for me and my sister and my friends, because I love Michael B. What was it like working with him?
Very smooth. Very, very smooth. He's a very easygoing guy, you know, down to earth, kind, you know, he's truly a kind person. And I thoroughly enjoyed working with him and look forward to working with him in the future again.
Love it. How did he find your experience and stuff? Were you putting out word of mouth, or do you know how that worked?
I mean, how did you find my experience? I guess a bunch of people were told a
Okay,
bunch of people, and you know,
good point.
I think the truth of the matter is that when you're doing something unique, and when you're doing it from a place of love and honesty, the word's going to spread. It might not happen overnight, but it would happen eventually, and that's what's happening in this case. It's, you know, especially with the story of the Unity Jollof rice and how it brings together the different cultures of West Africa into one. You know, that's such a unique story in itself, and I'm not surprised that you know, people are excited to talk about it and be a part of it.
For people listening to who may not know about jollof rice, do you want to talk a little bit about your interpretation of it, the importance of it?
Yeah, so jollof rice is West Africa's pride possession. It's like it's our most famous dish. You know, every country makes their jollof rice differently. And everyone argues about who makes the best ones. The Ghanaians would say their jollof is the best. The Nigerians would say theirs is better. The Senegalese usually just say you're all fighting for second place because they created the jollof. The origin of jollof does date back to the 1800s. in the westernmost part of West Africa, of Senegal, with a dish called tabougine, which is jollof rice, but with a bunch of different accoutrements, so a bunch of different things on top. And from there, it transcended and transferred into other parts of West Africa, as everyone makes their jollof rice differently. The main key ingredients in the jollof rice is a sweet pepper, whether it's a bell pepper, or in Nigerians, they call it tatashe. Or shombo, you know. So it's a big pepper alongside some habaneros, some onions, and in some cases tomatoes. Some people don't put tomatoes. Some people do it with tomatoes. Some people don't. I put tomatoes in mine.
Okay.
And then that is typically blended together and reduced. I roast mine before I blend, just to intensify that flavor a little bit. And then you basically fry that base. Some people don't fry it. Some people just add oil to it and season it. I fry mine, so I take oil, I add some ginger, some onion, some garlic, some ginger, you know, some tomato paste. And then I have a spice blend, which includes like curry, thyme, bay leaf, some salt, add that in there. And then some tomato paste as well. And then just let that fry and add the reduced reduced blended peppers and onions and tomatoes into that, let that fry, and then you add the rice and the stock. And then that gives you jollof rice. Now, traditionally, Nigerians will use a long grain rice, but the Ghanaians use the basmati or jasmine rice. So I use the basmati rice to represent the Ghanaians. And then the Nigerians like their rice to be a little spicier, so I increase my habanero a little bit. And then we also like the bottom crisp, like we like a little bit of like char at the bottom, which we stir in a little bit in there as well. And so I do that to bring in my Nigerian influence. And then I use typically vegetable stock, or I add plantains, and or I add some a variety of other elements into the jollof rice to bring in the Senegalese influence. So my jollof rice is a fusion of Ghana, Nigeria, and Senegal in one.
It was so good too.
Thank you.
Just a side note. Do you often experiment with it, or do you, I mean, it seems like you have your routine down.
Yes, I mean, I do experiment with it. I know that I did a test of concept in the Culver City in Bistro, the Ile Bistro, and since then we adjusted the recipe a little bit, you know, the ratios. They're pretty much the same things. They just play with the ratio a little bit here and there. I also do some things like the bottom crisp of my pot, the bottom bits, I use it in making a salad. I add it as like, almost like making a crispy rice salad, you know, sometimes, you know, and I play with the dish sometimes. I make a wrap with the jollof rice. So, I mean, sometimes I add, you know, seafood into my jollof rice. Sometimes I add carrots and peas and a bunch of vegetables into my jollof rice. Sometimes I roast some cabbage and throw it into my jollof rice. You know, there's really no right or wrong answer here. You can do whatever you feel with jollof rice.
Okay. All right.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah, I know. That sounds so good. I didn't eat lunch yet. I was actually going to ask you, are you still running?
No, that was a test of concept. So we're currently fundraising at the moment for that.
Okay.
So we have the private dining room here in Hollywood. Now we're open Friday and Saturdays on the new programming at 7 p.m. For our family style dining. And then on select nights, special nights for the tasting menu when I'm in town. We're going on tour next week. So the tour starts in D.C. at the White House. And then we carry on.
We're going to the White House?
Yep. And then,
whoa, you just suddenly dropped that. Because we're going to the White House, no big deal.
And then, with a brand, with a partner called Immigrant Food. And then and then we go to New York. We have a few partners there, including a few partners. I don't want to name any names just yet, you know. Just watch out for the tour. And then we are also going to New Orleans. We're going to Houston. We're going to Austin. We're going to Nashville. We're going to Miami. We're going to Atlanta. We're going to Lagos. We're going to Abuja. We're going to Ghana.
Wow. That's so fun.
Yeah, the bookings just came in. I'm excited. Like, today was really the beginning of, like, the tour itself. So, like, all the bookings for, like, the hotels and the flights just came in today. And I'm just like, yeah, it's really happening.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Are you nervous? Are there any nerves?
I'm nervous to be, like, stepping away from the private dining room for a while. But the good thing is that I have a solid team here. And the family style dining has been created in a way that it allows for it to continue without me. But I'll be checking in every month, you know. Not really nervous like that, because I've been traveling and cooking. This is actually a lot easier than my other tours, where I had to go rent a location, rent the tables, find the chefs, all of this. This time around, we're partnering with different chefs in different cities. So it's an easy lift. I'm just getting in there, I'm jumping in the kitchen, working with their teams, getting a dinner and moving on.
Okay. So with the other chefs, is this a collaboration?
It is a collaboration. On the menu as well, you're going to have West African and whatever culture. So West African and Vietnamese, West African and Senegalese, West African and,
That's so fun. I am curious. Do you have one that you're most excited for? Is it the White House?
I can't say. I don't know. I don't know. I'm really looking forward to New Orleans. I can't lie. Really looking forward to New Orleans, but I've never been to DC, so I'm very curious. I'm very, very excited about DC, to be honest. And the guys that we're partnering with in DC are super, super great. Chef Kevin and Chef Enrique are great chefs, and I can't wait to be in the kitchen with them.
That's so fun. I actually really like DC a lot, just the area in general. They have a lot of Chef Jose Andres restaurants.
Yes, yes. In New York, we're doing a Chef Jose Andres restaurant in New York.
Oh, you are? Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I love him. I went to, I'm blanking on the name. I think it starts with a J. One of his Spanish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jaleo?
Yes, yeah. I think that was it.
I was there in Vegas. I went there when I was in Vegas.
Oh, did you said Vegas is one of your stops too?
Well, it's supposed to be. I don't think we're going to do it. It doesn't seem likely. It seems like too much. I felt like there's too much going on. So let's leave Vegas until Vegas will happen at the end, which is when we come back next year. Because we start in the US and we head to Africa. So when we come back from Africa to the US is when we'll probably do Vegas. We might touch Europe on our way back. Probably touch Europe on our way back.
Yeah, you should totally should. Mm-hmm. I actually was talking about my travel next year, and me and my sister were just spitballing about Africa or somewhere else, but I just wasn't sure where to go. Where would you recommend?
Where in Africa?
This is so little.
I mean, I would always say come to Nigeria.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
But soft landings would be, everyone always says go to Ghana. And that's a nice balance. Nigeria is very intense. Not intense in the sense that there's a lot going on. You could easily just get lost in the number of activities. You definitely always want to have somebody that you're going with to Nigeria, just so you know where you're going and what's happening. Yeah. Ghana is great. The Gambia is amazing. The water is great. Seychelles is one of the most beautiful countries, so you definitely want to check that out as well. I love me some Cape Town, South Africa. So.
Oh yeah, I was looking at that too.
Yeah, it's beautiful down there.
I actually have a question because sometimes I ask about cuisines that maybe I'm not as familiar with, or maybe my audience isn't as familiar with. Are there any misconceptions that maybe could be here in the U.S. or just in general about West African cuisine that you want to clear up?
That is too difficult to make. That's one. That all there is jollof rice and fufu. There's a lot more. There's a bunch of porridges. So many really, really good porridges and stews. We have a variety of soups as well. And that our food is very meat heavy. As a matter of fact, it is actually very vegetable heavy, extremely vegetable heavy. We're a very vegetable heavy country. We do put meats in our food, but the base is vegetables. It's a lot of tomatoes, a lot of, green leaves, a lot of vegetables in our food.
Okay. What do you normally do with the vegetables? Is this a seasoning thing, or you're just
throwing them in? We throw them in and they cook, and we'll cook in the in there. So we do it we do a lot of things with ugu and spinach and water leaf, and there's a lot of different types of vegetables that are used for different types of stews and soups and porridges as well.
Yeah, porridges. I was looking up some of the trends as well, but I remember you served that drink. Was it a hibiscus thing? Am I remembering?
Yeah, it's hibiscus, zobo.
Okay, could you tell me what was in that?
So hibiscus, lemongrass, ginger. Those are the key ingredients.
Okay, I love that. And then I know you said it three times, but it's in my brain. So I wanted you to say it on here, so I had a record.
It's called zobo.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about what's next for you aside from, the PBS show we're talking about. We talked about the tour. Is there anything else that's going on that you'd like to
I mean,
share?
we're launching our merchandises soon, so I'm really excited about those. My hats, my spices. The spices are already out, but they're not launched officially. We're going to figure out the launch process. There's just so much going on as well. And then we're working on a few production projects as well. So keep an eye peeled. And then I just got signed by UTA, so we're going to start working on my
Nice.
book and all that other stuff. All that good stuff.
Oh my gosh. Like a memoir?
Of some sort, yeah. A storybook. I'm a story man. I'm a storyteller, so
Oh.
it's definitely gonna, the book is gonna be like me.
Oh my gosh. It's gonna be have a lot of thoughts in it, and it's gonna
I'm
be very
sure.
colorful,
I
I
won't be
can't think.
surprised if you open the book and there's a sound.
One of those, you should do one of those pop-ups when you open it and
Yeah, right?
it's just a pop-up. Trademark that. I'm trademarking that. That's so fun. What were the spice line? What does that entail?
So a variety of spices that we've been using in our cooking for the last couple of years, we've just basically packaged them up now. So we have our vegetable spice, which is called the goddess of the garden. We have our poultry spice, which is called birds of passion. I'm looking at them as well. We have the soya spice, we have our African gold spice. So it's about 7 or 8 different spices, including the Mickey jerk, which includes like a jerk spice.
Oh, yum. I meant to say this to you as well. So you live in that space, right?
Correct.
Like upstairs. I give you a lot of props for letting random people in your home.
I know. It's not easy. I have to cleanse the house every weekend.
Yeah, I would be cleansing the house deeply all the
Yeah,
time.
it's not easy. I can't even lie.
That's so funny. Yeah, I have like, I mean, I'm normal, but I have a germ thing. So I'm like, if I have all these people coming in my home all the time, because I'm assuming you cook yourself food all the time in that kitchen as well, and then you have the team coming in too.
We do have the team. We prep a couple of days. Like we're having an event today, so they're going to be joining in the next hour, and we're going to prep and then get ready for dinner as well. Yeah.
Love it. All right, I have one final question for you that I ask every single guest. If there is one cooking utensil or appliance that you think everyone should splurge on, what would it be and why?
I mean, I splurge on my knives,
Mm.
my chef knives. I splurge on my knives, and why? Just because they're knives, you're gonna use them every single time you're cooking, and you want a nice knife that can last the test of time and cuts well, pricey enough for you to take good care of it.
You're gonna have to pack all that up too for your
Yep,
tour.
definitely packing them up.
Oh my gosh. Well, good luck getting that through TSA. All
Yeah.
those
Oh, I
things.
do. I've been doing this a while. Just check it in.
And they let you
No, I
just
check
take
it in.
it
You check it into
because.
your luggage. Check luggage.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know if I said this on the episode before, but I had a garlic press in my carry-on because my dad like really, really felt I needed one. And they clocked me for it. And then they had to take all of my stuff out and they took out my garlic press and I was very
Yeah, you should have
sad.
just checked it in. Are you not checking?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have a check
Yeah,
bag.
you can't take all those equipments if you don't have a check bag.
Yeah, I learned. But anyways. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I know you had a crazy day today, so I appreciate you using the rest of your energy for this
My God.
podcast. And it was good to see you again.
All good, all good. Thank you for having me. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye, guys.
You can follow Chef Eros on Instagram at The Billionaire Chef, or if you live in Los Angeles or are just visiting, you can check out his private dining experience called Ille is Home on the website illeishome.com. Hey, fellow foodies, thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at Livin' for Food Pod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.